Yeah. And Jackie, if I am, what I'm going to do is be recording from one tape that's not very high quality but gets stuck to another shorter tape that's not very high quality but doesn't get stuck, I hope. And it's a very precious record, and I'll try and send you both. If I'm recording, what you're going to get is some more of my memories from tapes, which are pretty funny, and there may be some lapses.
Today is the 26th, maybe?
27th.
Couldn't be the 27th, is it? 27th of? 27th of November, 1982, post-Thanksgiving, here in the living room with Grandma and Grandpa and Kerr and Muffy lying with burrs in her ears. Now, Grandma, you started saying some interesting poems to me that I'd never heard before.
Well, I need some help on some of them as well as put them down. But this one little thing I've got straight. There's some poems that I remember completely, and there are others that I need a line or two to help me complete them. And some of them would be in one of the books that I would know, and I can look up a couple of the lines. So I'm not ready to give you particular poems, but this little...
Well, there was one that you spoke as a piece when you were little.
Yeah, several.
Okay, well, those are the ones that...
We're not ready to put those down just yet, because as I say, I know them, but there are one or two lines in some of them that I can't reproduce.
Well, I suggest we put down that Funny Hines one, first of all, because I don't know where we'd find that one.
Well, you would never find it.
Okay.
And that's why I wanted to say it to you, because I don't know anybody else that could put it down for you. And this was a sample of the type of thing that my parents would set me up on a chair and tell me to say this little bit of advertising that came from Hines, and that was done about 84 years ago. And it reminded me of now of the Frabjous Day,
mm-hmm.
and the Jabberwocky. Only these are just a couple of lines, but they're different. It went this way. Oh, the jolly boogog and the squealy jighas sang the squidge on the gugellum tree. And Heinz's baked beans and tomato sauce come boosters enough for me.
Come boosters? Sounds like they were deliberately trying to copy the
type
the Jabberwocky.
Thing. Yeah. C-U-M, come boosters.
C-U-M, boosters?
B-O-O-S-T-E-R-S. Come boosters enough for me.
One word?
Well, it could be two words or one. I've never seen it written. See, I just had it in my mind.
How'd you know it was C-U-M then instead of C-O-M-E?
Well, I don't think it was to make sense with C-O-M-E. Anyway, it always seemed to me to be C-U-M.
Say it again.
The whole business?
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, the jolly boogog.
Boogog?
Boogog.
How would you spell that? B-O-O-G-A-G?
G-O-G, I would say.
Boogog.
Boogog. B-O-O-G-O-G. Oh, the jolly boogog. And the squealy jighas. H-O-S-S. Sang the squidge on the gugellum tree. And Heinz's baked beans and tomato sauce come boosters enough for me.
How strange.
Funny. I thought it might be fun to tell Heinz's that was the...
Well, there wasn't any radio for it.
No.
So what? They must have read it out of something.
Well, they had it in magazines and newspapers. That was advertising in those days.
Okay.
The way they advertised is what I was thinking was so unusual and different when I thought about it.
Well, tell us another of your pieces, even though it's missing a line or two, and then we'll get it and we'll try to fill in the line or two.
Well, there was one that I used to speak a great deal by James Whitcomb Riley called Little Orphan Annie.
And yeah, I know that one.
I get mixed up with it. I get part of it all there, and then I need some help.
Give us part of it, and we'll be able to find it sometime.
It must be in the American poem.
Oh, it's all over. It's all over, yeah.
Little Orphan Annie's come to our house to stay.
to wipe
off. To wash the cups and saucers and brush the crumbs away. To da 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 da, and brush the hearth and sweep, and make the fire and bake the bread, and earn her board and keep. And when the supper things is done, all us children sit around the fire and have the mostest fun. I listen to the witch tale that Annie tells about the goblins will get you if you don't watch out.
Yeah.
We'd scare ourselves. Because once there was a little boy who wouldn't say his prayers, and when he went to bed at night away upstairs, his mommy heard him holler and his daddy heard him bawl. But when he went to bed at night, wasn't there at all.
But when they pulled the kivers back, isn't that the line?
That must be it.
But when they pulled the kivers back, he wasn't there at all.
Mm-hmm. They searched him in the rafter room and cubbyhole and press. They searched him up the chimney flue and everywhere, I guess. But all they ever found of him was this dispenser roundabout. And the goblins will get you if you don't watch.
What's a roundabout?
A little, we'd call it an overall maybe, or a little jumpsuit or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And once there was a little girl who'd always laugh and grin and make fun of everyone and all her blood and kin. And once when there was company, old folks was there. She mocked him and she shocked him and said she didn't care. They snatched her through the ceiling for she knowed what she's about. The goblins will get you if you don't watch out. The next voice, I can't remember it all except to say, so you better mind your manners and something your parent, mind your parents kind and dear. Well, the rest of that, I don't remember a few lines and then it ends up, or the goblins will get you. See, there's parts that just go and I can't get them back all at once. But occasionally they do come back after a while.
Mm-hmm.
Then I grab onto them. I hadn't remembered the rafter room for a while. And then I remembered the rafter room. And that gave me the whole line about the chimney flue.
Mm-hmm.
And press, that was a hard one to remember just long ago. Searched him through the rafter room and cubbyhole and press.
Mm-hmm. That would be a closed
funny
press.
One. Mm-hmm. Searched him up the chimney flue and everywhere as I get. Well, like that. I'm not ready with the
well, you might just list some of the others, and then I can ask you or try to find the words for them. What are some of the other ones you know?
Well, one of the ones that we used to love to do was, oh, what is so rare as a day in June.
Okay, that's easy to find.
And if ever come perfect day, and heaven tries earth, if it be in tune and over it softly and warm your way. Whether we look and whether we listen, we hear life murmur and see it glisten. Every cloud feels us. Something or other.
Mm-hmm.
I'm about through there, you see. Then I have to look up a
Who
word
wrote
or
that,
two.
Browning?
No, Lowell.
Lowell.
I think James Randall mm-hmm. Lowell. It was one I used to say that I don't remember at all now, except the fact that it started out with grandfather's spectacles cannot be found. We have looked everywhere, up and down, round and round. Round and round. And it goes on telling all the places that they hunted for the spectacles.
Mm-hmm.
And then it says something about, I absolutely no one knows why there are the glasses on Grandpapa's nose.
Mm-hmm.
Silly little pieces like that. But we had a store of them, you know, ready to get up and pop when we had to.
Yeah, well, I'd like to do a radio show and call it Speaking Pieces. And
but that could be later.
Everybody
on
learn
here when we'd all learn get ready, get them ready, and not have to grow up for it. And I thought, too, of all the times when I was in grade school, how much patriotic thing, how much patriotic stuff they made us know and sing and talk about and speak. And we knew our lines and we knew what happened in the Revolutionary War and all of these things. I mean, they crammed it down. Nowadays, sometimes they don't even teach American history.
They have to teach that.
They do?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Put on.
Olive used to love these dramatic pieces. And then I always learned them because she would be learning them. And they were awfully funny nowadays. One was, "They're hanging me to the gallows, Mother. They're going to string me high." I'm not ready to do all of that one, but it's a good one.
Are you working on that one in your waking hours when you can't sleep at night?
Yeah.
Okay, that's what I'd like to
get. Gather around me there and watch me till I die. It's quite a long one, several verses. And then there was one that's, "Curfew shall not ring tonight."
Yeah, that's a well-known
and
one.
And the Wreck of the Hesperus. What I remember particularly was something that "We are lost," the captain shouted as he staggered down the stair. And then about his lovely little daughter as she took his icy hand. And in Helen Keller's writing, she had talked about a child taking the father's icy hand. And also in Eleanor Roosevelt's story, they were putting in some of her writings, and one was a child that, I mean, it sounded as though they thought they'd made it up themselves. She took his icy hand. And then she said, "Is not God upon the water just the same as on the land?"
And that allowed the captain to rally.
Safe into the harbor. Comical.
Well, let's put on tape that story about your third grade teacher who had you take care of the class. Tell that story again, the one you told me the other day.
My nose keeps running. I'm going to do something about that first. My eyes water and run. I get in my eyes. One time when I was a little girl in third grade, my teacher had to leave for some reason or other, which I never knew. And she asked me to come up and sit in her chair and take care of the class for this last hour, and then we'll just dismiss the class. I think we were doing some reading, so there wasn't anything difficult to do, but it was very peculiar that she would have left a third grader to take care of her own class, but that's the way it happened. At the time when the bell rang and I dismissed the class, a little girl came rushing up to me and she said, "Do I have to take home all my books?" And I said, "Why, if you want to, you could take them home." And I was just shocked. I didn't know why on earth she wanted to take her books home, and then I didn't know why she wanted to cry about it. Well, I felt very insecure. I told her she could put her books back. She had them all in her arms. So she went back and put them in her desk and went home. Well, that's just that little story.
It's a strange one.
That was a teacher that died in the Iroquois fire. in Chicago at Christmas time. A group of teachers all went together to this very wonderful play, and they had a frightful fire, and many, many people were killed, trampled, burned, and it was the scandal of the year. Worst thing that had happened in Chicago for a long, long time. Her name was Miss Schroyer.
One verse you remember you said
yeah,
is?
Yeah, just remember Hilda Duck got up and said this one, and I remembered her saying it. There are many flags of many lands, there are flags of every hue, but there's one flag most grand, is our own red, white, and blue. And she stood up with the flag.
We're going to get a little bit of things here that I've been wanting to ask Dad about, and he was just saying about the difficulty he had trying to get early semen when he'd go in through the rectum and try to, what, get the sac that the semen was in, or the...
Well, I don't remember now just exactly what it was, but we would get down to the area of the testicles, and,
yeah.
And then we would work semen out of the testicles and up over the
pelvic
area, and that would run down out of the penis. But that would cause all sorts of contamination. Like you couldn't get the penis clean enough and so forth.
Mm-hmm.
The sac, the sheath of the penis.
Mm-hmm.
And beside that, the bull didn't like it very much.
I imagine the bull didn't.
And I
didn't do it all myself by any matter of means. I was working with Dr. Nyland. And then we established the first artificial insemination organization in the United States. Not the first one. The first one was in New Jersey.
Yeah, we got that all.
That was organized in the middle of summer, and we have organized, I think, in October. All right. Better shut it off then until we think that you didn't work.
Well, what I want to ask you. Well, that's okay. I've got that and I can write that up while you guys watch television tonight. But I wanted to ask Daddy, what was the Pure Milk Association?
Pure Milk Association was an organization of farmers producing milk here in the Midwest, and they developed considerable clout, and they still have it. The simple clout. I don't know just what has happened to it since I was closely associated with it, but they would bargain. They represented the farmers. And
it wasn't a government thing or a state thing?
No. It was a co-op representing the farmers that were selling to dealers. And all of my farmers, all the people I was buying from, members of the Pure Milk Association.
And were you a member of the Pure Milk Association?
Well, the farm was. And I was, but the farmers contributed a few cents of 100 pounds of milk, which the dealers would take out of their milk checks and forward to the Pure Milk Association. And, I've got files full of monthly reports from the Pure Milk Association about how the prices arrived at, and what was base prices for the farmers, and what was surplus price. And I have a whole list of the patrons and what they were being paid, and how their base price and their surplus price was arrived at. And I continued my own herd in the Pure Milk Association, amounted to $60-$70 a month, I suppose, to the Pure Milk Association as dues.
And what did they use that money for? To send people around to?
For advertising and maintaining their office.
Well, did they come and look over premises and decide if places were clean enough
no,
or
no,
anything
no,
like
no,
that?
No, nothing other than that. They were just representing the farmers and attempting to better their lot, better their price.
Hmm.
And it was a good organization, and I sat in meetings with a representative of the Pure Milk Association and the other dealers in town, and we'd bicker and bargain and finally decide what this area should be paying for milk. And we'd have to live with it.
So you were sort of on the one side, and you were on both sides, because you were both a producer and a dealer.
Well, and as far as the farmers were concerned, it was all entirely voluntary on their part. If they wanted to belong to the Pure Milk Association, they had a check on. And if they didn't want to belong, why, they didn't take a check on. But they were still governed by what the majority of the farmers had bargained for sale of their milk. And the time when arrived, when, oh, and they advertise milk, of course, they still do. And they've got an office in Madison, I'm sure they've got an office in Madison, probably main office in Chicago. And there must be various combinations of these farmer groups all over the United States. This PMA here was one of the bigger ones. But there came a time when I didn't, I had ideas about advertising and got in touch with them and told them what my ideas were. And they just sort of brushed me off. And I decided that I could advertise, I could spend the money that I was paying the Pure Milk Association from our herd. I could use that money better for doing my own promoting. So I did that. So I could set him there, check off from the Doak and Guernsey farm. Although I continue to send it from my farmer.
For the people that sent you milk?
Mm-hmm.
You sent it in for them, but not for yourself?
That's right.
And was that when you started your big advertising campaign with all the children in the paper? Because you'd done a little before that.
Oh, I don't know whether it fell right in there or not, but probably it was. I mean, mm-hmm. I expanded my own advertising. And you know the story of why I fell out with them, of course.
I've forgotten, if I didn't know.
Well, that was when I discovered how good coffee milk was.
Oh, we haven't got that on tape. Go on.
Well, I was on the board of directors of the American Dairy Cattle Club, and that was the group that was headed up by Rock Prentice before he got into artificial insemination. And it was trying to improve the dairy cattle throughout the country by enlisting herds. And the cows had to be all on a test.
Yeah, I've got all that down somewhere.
All right.
On the American Dairy Cattle Club, so we don't need to go into that.
All right. And it was in that club that I got in touch with somebody in the East, a man in the East that had a very big spread of jerseys. And then he went down into the Caribbean and had a big outfit down there. And he lost his shirt on that operation, but he had another spare shirt. So I guess it didn't hurt him too much. But one time he came through here and Mommy was out on her travels, and I put him up and kept him overnight, and then he wanted to say, let me have to make the coffee himself. And I think they had, I'm sure they had powdered coffee, I mean instant coffee at that time.
Mm-hmm.
Pretty sure. But at any rate, he poured milk into a pan and boiled the milk, and then poured the milk over the coffee, and put in some sugar, and here was a very tasty drink. And when Mommy came back, I introduced her to it. And from that day to this, probably 30 years, that's what my breakfast has been. cup of instant coffee made with boiled milk. And I thought it was such a good deal if a man could get up and make his breakfast without even disturbing his wife if he wanted to. And she could sleep on very happily knowing that her husband had a substantial breakfast. Well, at any rate, I worked up the whole idea and presented it to the Pure Milk Association. I even arranged to have the Hilton Hotel. That never happened, but if they were going to do it, I would furnish them the milk, and they could furnish the coffee or some such arrangement, and or I'd furnish both milk and coffee, and they could give every breakfast customer a cup of milk coffee. Of course, I fell right in with the idea because we'd had coffee at Café au Lait in France.
Mm-hmm.
And, well, the Pure Milk Association didn't warm up to it, and they tried it on their girls in the Chicago office, and the girls didn't go for it. Maybe four or five girls down there, maybe half a dozen, I don't know. But at any rate, they didn't give it a go-ahead. And then the officers down there decided that, told me that they were not going to follow up the idea because they didn't go in for a tie-in advertising. They didn't want to advertise coffee with milk. And that made me mad because even if only 1 out of 10 folks tried it, if they could get 1 out of 10 folks to try it, and they continued for 30 years drinking a pint of milk, a piece or something like that for breakfast, but ordinarily wouldn't drink milk at all.
Mm-hmm.
How would that handle the surpluses? And when they told me that they wouldn't tie in, and I think I remind them of peaches and cream and various other milk and other combinations, and I've watched it over the years, and now they tell you how good cornflakes are, and they show you a little bowl of cornflakes and doused with the dairy products and make some strawberries on top.
Mm-hmm.
Perfect meal, you see. Cheerios. You never see a bunch of Cheerios on radio, but it's doused with milk.
Mm-hmm.
And, so that's when I decided that I could spend my $60 or $70 a month more effectively advertising my product here at home. Which I did.
Are you one of the board for advertising?
I forget what the advertising was. The children advertising.
You won what sort of an award? Who gave it?
Well, the Daily News got it for a series of ads that were run.
Hmm. So the Daily News got the award, but
oh,
it was for your advertising.
Yeah, for the advertising campaign that they'd used. And the ads that I wrote, I thought considerably better than the stock ads that the guy that had my account down there ran.
Yeah, I'm going to write up those ads soon. I haven't done that yet.
I know you've got 3 books on them.
Yeah, I know, and I should take them back with me this time because I'll be out of school from the 17th on, but I can't much time.
No. They'll keep. And I still surround people every once in a while, middle-aged people, that say, I was out to your place when I was in first grade or second grade, and I rode a cow or there was milk in my mouth. He showed me the witch's house.
Yeah, you see, that's one of the things that needs writing up, the school trips.
The hollering house.
Yeah.
the Hennessy.
All that, yeah.
Selling out the seeds.
What?
Selling out the seeds.
Well, I didn't show too much of that. I showed some.
There's some
I had a Mrs. Rowe at Todd's school. And her husband is one of the five or six school principals that came out here and painted my house a couple of times. And Mrs. Rowe was a very, very good teacher, second grade. And she outlined what she wanted me to do on this trip. She wanted it to be an educational trip, not just a bunch of fun.
Mm-hmm.
So I had to demonstrate how some of the machinery worked. How is it? I thought she was a lovely woman. Of course, Roe died very young. Well, that's all I got to say.
Let's be sure we're getting it.